everyone, it's Henry, Mike, and Jeff of The Decentralists, and welcome to another hot topic. I love the title of this one, Mike, The Internaut.
Well, thank you, Henry.
You know, the reason you sort of went for that, I understand now, after I read the article in Vice, it reported on a company called Lantern that has an app that's becoming wildly popular in Russia and China for those that want to avoid their national censorship and the country's control of the internet. So, I mean, popularity of apps like Lantern and other VPNs show that there's a lot of people who are interested in circumventing their government's efforts. And I understand that. They want freedom the way the internet was supposed to be. But this leads to a number of questions. And right off the bat, I'd like to know, how can the internet be so surprisingly easy to filter or block? And second of all, these VPNs that are becoming very, very popular, do they work? Do they present a danger? Are they sustainable? Mike, over to you.
So this is actually kind of a very scary topic, frankly. You know, we had a, you know, we've been working on kind of censorship resistant and metadata resistant, you know, tracking kind of technologies so that, you know, we could provide people a way to interact across the internet.
Right.
That was, you know, anonymous and private and secure and, you know what I mean? Allow people to maintain control over their, you know, kind of how they represent themselves online. Okay. And one of the reasons why you even need to do that is because it is relatively easy to control and filter and block technology, especially over the internet where it's centralized.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, literally goes down to the base kind of address level of the internet. Okay. So if you think about your neighborhood, everybody has a, you know, they have an address, they have a postal code or a zip code or something like this, and you can write that on an envelope and that mail gets delivered to you. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if all of a sudden you think, how easy would it be for, say, Canada Post or Royal Mail or the U.S. Postal Service to stop delivering to you?
Very, very easy.
Easy, right? They know your address, right? Even if they have just your zip code, right? Let's say that's all they have, right? My postal code is basically the block that I'm on,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, even if they decided, okay, well, I don't really know who it is, but I know they're in this zip code because I don't have the actual street address. It's easy enough for me to just go into the internet, into the plumbing, right? The down layers, the stuff, you know, these databases that sit in places like the Postal Service that says this zip code means this area, right? Mm-hmm. And they just go in and they check a little box somewhere and they say, do not deliver to those addresses. So the internet functions exactly the same way.
Hmm.
You know, if you look at, you know, you can go up into addresses, right? A lot of people don't look at, say, things like IP addresses and DNS addresses, right? These are these little things that look like 192.01.06.08.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. That's like a non plain text way of saying, you know, www.peer.social. Okay. So if somebody knows that specific address that is basically assigned to where my website is, to what my website transmits, and to anybody who accesses that website, if you can exercise control over the telcos, right, and the wireless and maybe even satellite providers that are basically saying, okay, you want to access Facebook. Well, Facebook has a DNS address, has a zip code. And so if you're in a country, I pick a name, Russia, China, Iran, hell, even the US, Canada, if you were saying, hey, I want to be able to restrict, filter, or block traffic to Facebook, all I need is their zip code. And basically I can go into my back end and I can say, okay, just block it wholesale. So if anybody tries to type in facebook.com or that zip code, it doesn't go anywhere, right? Or I can just say, anytime you see traffic that's going to and from this address, monitor it and censor it. So they're two different issues.
It's that simple, is it?
It's literally, you know, that simple. I mean, I'm sure there's a few, you know, little extra things, right? Like this is where VPNs come in, right? Because there's two separate issues. There's censorship, right? Which is what you hear a lot about in China, which is, you know, I'm watching every single thing, and you'll hear people in China, they'll post something on WeChat, and if they say the wrong thing, like Tiananmen Square, you know, within an hour, it's gone. Mm-hmm. And that's because people know where everything's going and they can just look at this stuff, right? Whereas blocking stuff and saying, no, you can't access that is kind of where the firewall, the great firewall of China comes in, and the one they're building in Russia. So they're two different things, but it's because everything, every person and every website and every service behind it is clearly identifiable by an address that is accessible to anyone.
Okay, thank you. So now we know why and how it's quite easy to stop it or control. Jeff, for those who don't, who may not know, because I certainly didn't a few years ago, can you explain what a VPN is and why some people would want to use that?
Sure. So if you connect to the internet and you connect to your internet service provider and you go and visit a website or so on, as Mike said, you go to wikipedia.com, maybe they're wikipedia.org, can't recall right now, but you type that in, something called a DNS server turns that into a collection of numbers, and then it then serves that web page up to you. What a VPN does is it allows you to put, in effect, what's known as a virtual tunnel across the internet. So instead of you hitting, for example, a server in Canada or in the United States or so on, it sends your traffic to a server in, let's say, the UK or Brazil or some other nation, and then you pop out the other end, and then it does your lookup there.
Ah.
So as far as the server is concerned, well, we're talking about multiple servers here, but as far as the system is concerned, to use a broad term, it thinks you're in Brazil, it thinks you're in Britain, it thinks you're in the United States.
It sort of relocates you.
It in effect relocates you where you're, if you can imagine, shooting down your own private digital tunnel and popping you out the other end in another nation, as opposed to just popping you out in Canada, or if you're at the Disneyland Hotel, popping you out in Los Angeles or wherever you happen to be, mm-hmm. Getting onto the internet. And the first place this really started to get traction was when streaming services came along, where somebody wanted to watch Monty Python, but you could only watch Monty Python if you were in the UK. And so you would sign up for a VPN that would make it appear that you were in the UK, even though you were in Vancouver or Boston, and then you could watch Monty Python and so on. To get around these geolocation of these services where streaming providers were trying to overlay traditional licensing models on top of this global worldwide web.
Okay.
And then from there, they grew into the kind of things that we're talking about in Russia now, where it allowed you to have another layer of privacy, where if traffic was originating in Russia or so on, if you wanted to, you know, hop outside of Russia, you could shoot down this encrypted tunnel, pop out in Spain, and then you could do whatever you want and circumvent the blocks that might appear in Russia.
Okay, thank you.
And what is interesting about this is it's also worth laying a bit of a history lesson over top of this. When the internet was first developed, nearly 50 years ago now, and really started to strongly appear 40 years ago. It was originally built, by the US military, as a secure network for communications that could, if you can believe it, root its way around nuclear attacks. Mm. So if you wanted to mm-hmm. communicate between, let's say San Francisco and Seattle, or perhaps Los Angeles and Seattle, and San Francisco had been taken out by a nuclear bomb, then the ARPANET traffic, which was what's known as switched packets, and ARPANET was the original name for the internet, the traffic would route itself around San Francisco. So it might go Los Angeles to Las Vegas to Denver to Salt Lake City to Seattle. And you had all these nodes, these routers that were routing the traffic. And the idea was in this ideal world, pardon me, where the internet would be free and all this traffic would move between these nodes seamlessly, and and the world would be just this great global public square. Well, what was failed to take into account is in some cases, totalitarian nations would say, well, that's fine, but we're going to have one node that enters our nation instead of these 50 nodes or 100 nodes. And so if you block everything at that one node, well, presto, suddenly this global public square isn't quite so global anymore. And the idea of the VPN would be to still punch a hole through that node and get into that wider network.
You're 100% correct. These VPNs first started to show up when the services, and it could be anything from, say, a Netflix to a YouTube to anything, were being restricted based on what they called digital licensing rights. Okay. So Netflix, to your example, has the rights to Monty Python in the UK, but they choose not to share those rights with people who subscribe from the US. Okay, so I get this VPN, I pretend I'm from the UK, and off I go. But let's look at it in the context of these people in Russia, in China, in a totalitarian regime that are looking to access content that's been blocked or filtered, or, you know, just like you said, that one node has been restricted. They punch a hole and they theoretically have access on the outside. But let's actually add a little extra flavor to this. A VPN is a virtual private network. Okay. So you download one of these VPN, a piece of VPN software, whether it's, NordVPN or maybe these Lantern guys in Russia, and you subscribe to a service where you basically go in and you say, okay, my name's Mike Chalid. I've got this VPN and I want to subscribe to this service. I download the app. I go in, I press a button with a little Canadian flag, and now it comes out that I'm in Canada or I'm in the UK or I'm in whatever. And so there's some unique problems with this, right? One is there's somebody operating that virtual private network. So it's still a centralized attack vector. The fact that I have a VPN app that I subscribe to is recorded at NordVPN. And the fact, and when I come from my address in, Lviv, and I click on an address in the UK, it's recorded at Nord.
So Mike, basically what you're saying is these VPN tunnels, they absolutely, they have value. However, I guess like any other software service on today's internet, it's a centralized service. So therefore the people who host it know who's using it.
Well, there's that, Henry. And there's the fact that it could be blocked. I mean, if you know that Nord is operating out of a centralized website, you can get their address and you can block it. Right. But what generally happens, and this is kind of the, I want to say the ironic part of this, but also the most dangerous part of this, is consider that you're the Russian authorities right now, okay? And what you're doing is let's say you're a little bit paranoid about protesters, about people that are, could potentially be the starting point of a new protest in a city or whatever. One of the things that you could use is indication of, let's say you want to call it like potential treasonous behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And you define treasonous behavior as being a citizen of, say, Russia and accessing forbidden content that's been blocked, right?
Right.
Well, it's easy to say anybody who's using a known VPN, right? And you can easily get that list. Just go to the freaking app store and there's every single VPN.
Yeah, they're all
download.
There.
You download them there, you get some guy and they've got lots of cyber people. They can track where all those DNS addresses are. And they can basically say, we're not going to shut these VPNs down, at least not yet. What we're instead going to do is we're going to go and maybe send some cops into the NordVPN office and strong arm them for the client list.
Ugh.
Or we're going to go in and we're just going to sniff all the traffic. And what we're going to get is we're going to get a list of zip codes and or addresses, to go back to the previous analogy, of potential treasonous sources of information. So just the fact that you downloaded a VPN, and you may have downloaded it for an innocent reason, which is to watch Monty Python in the UK.
Yeah, really.
You are now on a hit list, or at least a suspect list. And this is the thing that people don't consider when they consider VPNs, is Nord has all of these addresses somewhere, right? A UK, Brazil, blah, blah, blah. And they route your traffic through that address. Well, on the Nigerian or the Brazilian or the UK end, they know it's coming from Nord. And on your end, when you're going out, they know it's coming from you. So it's blockable, it's trackable, and it's really actually more dangerous than not using a VPN.
Okay, so we're looking at potentially people realizing in the future that VPNs are not the answer. Are they sustainable?
It depends what you know what it is that you're trying to do, I suppose, and where you are. I think if you are in somewhere like North Korea or Myanmar or somewhere where they'll you know where things are highly strictly regulated, then it may very well be the case that the very act of having a VPN on your device is, as Mike said, is treason, and you could go to jail for that, and someone could grab your phone and say, why do you have this on here, and what have you done, and you can attack it from that end.
Mm-hmm.
In other contexts where you know you're just somebody who likes to watch Japanese anime, and the only way you can get it, you live in Boston, is to get a VPN that gets you into Japan. Perhaps you might get a nasty letter one day saying you're in violation of copyright laws by watching anime, but you're sort of fine. The long-term solution is what we've been talking about on this podcast, which is a solution that hops peer to peer from device to device to device until finally you can hop outside the network and go back to this truly peer to peer model of the internet, like we talked about for 40 years ago, which is I think the objective, which is a decentralized mechanism to get the data from one point to another, so there isn't a single attack surface that you can go after. And this is what the Tor network is to some degree. And that's a subject for another podcast another day, but create that peer to peer environment where you're not going from your device to some centralized server that knows where you originated, where you're going, and everything in between.
You know, and I think just to add on to that, for the average citizen, let's say in a country that wants to educate themselves or to get, you know, kind of escape some restrictions that they might be under by their government. There's two issues that you need to deal with from a technology perspective. So one of them is the issue that the VPN tries to solve. Okay. And so this is the ability for you as a person or even a business or whatever within the country to be able to get out of the country and access content outside of the country. Okay. So to Jeff's point, we were on a call the other week, and we had a presentation by one of our researchers, Dr. Goodell, and he showed a map of the internet and the connections in Russia. Okay. And for example, there's this kind of complete network of all of the telcos and the ISPs and everything that are inside Russia. And they're the way that you connect people inside the country. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's the way you connect. And then that big blob of Russia connects through like four nodes or five nodes through tier one carriers like Vodafone to the rest of the internet. Okay. So if you want to get out there when the Russian government has cut that off, you need something like Tor, which basically is, a protocol that essentially allows you to do what Jeff just said, which is hop to hop to hop. Okay. And that is how you basically make it so that it's really, really, really hard to block somebody from accessing the internet and from being able to transmit their messages and things.
Mm-hmm.
But the other issue is censorship. Because if you're within, say, the country and within the borders, presumably the telcos and the ISPs that operate the connections to the citizens are under the rule of law of that country. right? So this is the idea that even if you were able to, say, maintain a live internet connection against the restrictions placed at the carrier level by the government, your traffic could still be monitored, could still be intercepted, could be, you know, checked. And like I said earlier in the example of, say, the Chinese internet, just scrubbed. So you have people, an army of people that are looking through all your information, and they're able to tell who you are associated to your VPN usage. And now they just basically, you know, they're checking all the stuff that you're sending, okay? Not the fact that you're connecting. And so, you know, that is a separate issue that you need to use a separate set of technology, Henry. And the reality is what you're doing is you're playing a game of cat and mouse with these authorities, right? You're basically saying, I need to basically take it to the point where if you're going to stop me from communicating, period, or you're going to censor my communications, I need to make it as hard as possible. And the goal would be to say, if you want to filter my communication or block my communication as a citizen of North Korea, you need to shut down the entire internet. Ugh. Right? What you do is you use technologies like what's called UDP hole punching. Okay. Another name for that is WebRTC, which is a, you know, kind of a protocol that's used by the guys like Netflix to send video streams. So if you were to use that, okay, a common video streaming technology with commonly known addresses, same structure as the centralized internet, but that structure is used by Netflix, YouTube, probably all of the North Korean websites to send out, you know, propaganda videos. Mm-hmm. So if you basically still want to be able to send propaganda, you still want to be able to control the communication on the internet, you can't block that technology because then you can't send your propaganda.
Of course. So
this is what you need to do, right? Is you need to say, okay, you can go ahead and you can say, you can block my traffic if you want, my one house on this street, but you're actually going to end up having to block everybody on this street in order to block me. Because you don't know who I am. And that's a step that they don't want to take. And that's why you need to do this.
So, Mike, Jeff, what is the answer? How can we ensure that people can communicate the truth without being blocked or censored? I believe we have the solution. We have a prototype. But what are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's largely, you know, what Mike just said. I mean, to some degree, it's a bit of a cat and mouse game in terms of playing catch up. But it is ultimately, it is making it as difficult as possible through solutions like peer-to-peer technology, like we're working on, to make it near to basically use the framework of the internet and how it was intended to operate in a decentralized fashion.
Yeah.
In order to route this information around and to get it to the point where the only way that these totalitarians can shut down freedom is to shut down the internet itself. Which is nothing that they want to do because they depend on it as much as everybody else.
Yeah.
The only thing I would add to that, I think it's also important to realize that the principles of anonymity and the principles of anti-censorship and the principles of anti, say, metadata tracking, right, which is all this address information that goes with your communications. It is a Herculean task.
Oh yeah.
Okay. To try to create these types of let's say anti surveillance and anti filtering and blocking technologies. So what you need to do is work with the people who've been doing it for 20 years. Right? Because what you want to do is you want to say, look, this has been a constantly evolving battle. It is going to continue to constantly evolve. Totalitarian states are going to get more aggressive and more sophisticated in the ways that they detect, control, and block communications. So the way that you combat that is you use the most common, you know, existing ways to do this, and you support those technologies to continue in their efforts to provide a almost like a white noise, right? That overshadows all the individual connections, right? And all you see is you go, okay, there's tons of data that's transmitting this Tor network. Okay. Well, the Tor guys built it that way.
Yeah.
And tons of this traffic is coming from North Korea and China and Russia and insert totalitarian regime here, Myanmar.
Right.
But they can't figure out where it's going or where it's coming from.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so they can't block it. Right. It becomes really, really hard. They can go block that one and block that one and block that one. And then three more spring up. And so it's literally what it is, Henry, is we all need at the base level, we all need to have the ability to, you know, freely communicate over this free communication medium. That was what it was intended to be. Mm-hmm. And if what that means is that we need to support these people that are going to help us do that, that's what we should do. And the best way to support them is to use their technologies and to, you know, support their development efforts, contribute code, do things like that back and forth. You know, they help us, we help them. And what you end up with is a really robust solution that nobody, no single actor can easily disable.
Yeah, can hijack.
That's right.
That makes perfect sense. Michael, Jeff, thank you so much for chatting about VPNs today. And honestly, I actually didn't know that they are indeed susceptible because, like everything else on today's internet, there's a centralization point for that. And thank goodness, you know, we are making headway with our prototype, and it's and the fact that we're going to incorporate something like Tor, good for them. One day we're going to have to do a show on Tor and their technology.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Henry.
Thanks, Henry.